All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready-Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com, or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com, for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
Mountain State Survival covers your bases for your planning, prepping, evacuation, bugging in, or bugging out needs. They carry anything from educational material, camping supplies, emergency services supplies, food, first aid, survival kit and equipment, shooting gear, survival gear, tactical gear. They carry it all. They got it in stock. Give Mountain State Survival a ring. That's mountain-state-survival.com. Get this type of supplies while you still can. 304-517-6935. Mountain State Survival is one of the only places that I know of currently that is still carrying the delicious Peak Refuel meal that is ready to eat. It's personally the only thing that I eat at this point whenever I go out camping, whenever we have any type of emergency or disaster situation. That is the meal that I stick with. And you can find that at mountain-state-survival.com. Use Wrecker5 for a 5% discount on your overall purchase. That's Wrecker5, mountainstatesurvival.com.
This show on the Heroes Nation app. Heroes Nation is the Heroes Nation app you can download in the App Store. It's up and coming. They got a lot of cool information on there. That is the main backup site so far for the American Vindicta Show. We'll also have some stuff on there that won't be on YouTube. It won't be on Rumble. It'll either be only on the GSRadio.net, who is the host of the American Vindicta Show, or it will only be an exclusive for Heroes Nation. And with that, I mean, you know, stuff that we're doing with the cave exploration, with the archaeological stuff. I'm going to start getting into a lot of paranormal talks and, you know, coming at that from my law enforcement and Christian perspective, and be having guests on, and that will be exclusive to Heroes Nation. So make sure that you give them some love. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, everybody, for supporting me. God bless you, and have a good day.
Hello, everybody. Dave Hodges here with Doug Thornton here on the Doug and Dave Intel Report. And you are watching the CommonSenseShow.tv. And we really welcome you. As you know, we're censorship free. That's really important. And we are commercial free. That's also nice, isn't it? And you can see we have a return visit from Brent Height from Outdoors. And the last time he was on, we talked about pyramids and mounds. And man, we got a lot of good feedback. People said, I love that guest having back on. Well, here he is. And tonight we're going to talk about giant and giant structures. In fact, you're looking at two men right here that go out in the wild with other people. And I do mean the wild, and explore things I'd be afraid to go into. And they go into caves and all kinds of stuff like that. I'm happy to watch from my TV, the History Channel. But these guys have better stuff than the History Channel. So that's why you're going to like this interview. So giants and giant structures. So if I were coaching college basketball, would I want to recruit these guys? How tall were they?
Giants, 7 to 9 feet.
Oh, my gosh. Coming. Oh,
mm-hmm. There was a report from Virginia that I was able to find, and this was dated back, I believe, in the 60s. And the sheriff of this town of Virginia claimed to have found a 10-foot-tall male skeleton. Obviously, we judge the male by the distance of the pelvic, of the pelvic bone. And so he had this on display for a certain amount of days in the sheriff's department, and people were coming by and looking at it, and then it just fiddles out like everything else. Dave, from what I found through my research, and, you know, full transparency here, guys, the research that we do is based off the internet. So what we can find in databases, what we can find in old newspapers, that doesn't always mean that it's accurate, but it's the only information that we got. So that's the information we have to go on a lot of times, besides pictures and self-evidence and then testimony. So being someone who was, you know, previously in law enforcement, testimony sometimes means quite a bit. Your testimony can convict someone for murder, but yet your testimony will get you thrown out of most college academics if you say that you saw a giant skeleton. So there's a big, you know, issue here, and I'm going to let Brent talk more about this. But from the 1700s, actually the 1600s, all the way up until 1900s, I found reports from England of giants ranging from 12 to 14 feet tall that were found in henge-like structures in Britain and also in Scotland. And then now in America, we have the same thing. But I'm going to say this one thing, and then I'm going to let Brent take off with it. There seems to be two different types of giants that we find. There's an average height giant between 7 foot and 7.5 feet. And it almost always seems to be female. And then we have something that is above 7.5 feet to a great amount. You know, the tallest I think that I've read so far was 14 feet. There's one report of 20 feet, but I don't exactly believe that. Now, I think the ones that are found, especially like in the caves in the sitting position, Brent, that are always, almost always female, they are always between the height of 7 foot, 7 foot four, 7 foot five. And then once again, the male's subsequent height, much greater. So if you look at the way mammals within nature are, like gorillas and other mammalian species, the male species tends to always be very much more dominant in size and mass and bone mass than the females were. I think it's the same thing within the giants. There, and once again, when you start doing your research, you find a lot of giants that are female. Once again, we base female off of the pelvic region, that are almost always around 7 foot four. Brent, thanks for being on. Why do you think this is?
Well, first of all, thanks for you guys for having me. I think it's like you say, you know, in most cases in the animal world and in modern humans, the male subject is usually taller than the female or bigger or more robust. So let's talk about just what you and I have discovered, Doug, here on one of our Arkansas trips that we took. We visited a cave. We've got local people telling us the lore, and we've also found newspaper documentation of a 7 foot four skeleton that was taken from this cave that we visited. We also found artifacts, and but the local guy there that took us there, our friend and colleague Billy Harris, also told us information about another skeleton, which was a male skeleton, which was 8 foot in height. So, you know, that would go along with what you just described, the 7'4" female. She was in a sitting position. And this other cave that we've not yet been to, he's describing that there is an 8 foot. He says that he called it a chief. And he said he based that on the artifacts that he found with it. So that, you know, that lines up with what you just said about the women being the smaller subject and the males being larger. I think that you'll find that throughout history. You know, we have you're talking about the 14 footers, King Og of Bashan, according to what the Bible mentions, was about that height, 13 to 14 feet. And then we have the story that most people commonly know about Goliath. That's also recorded in the Bible. Goliath was probably a 9 footer. It seems like Goliath was later on in time than King Og. So it seems as if maybe these things might be getting shorter as time goes on. I don't know. Yeah,
that's worth exploring too. Can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. And I know I'm going to sound like a flaming liberal, but I'm curious. Is there any indication that there's a racial differences between these giants? Like, you know, we have whites and blacks and Hispanics and Asians and so forth. Is there any examples of different strains of giants?
From what I've seen so far, you have fair-haired and red-haired. With the Philistines and with other different tribes, they came in all different shapes and sizes, to be honest with you. The giants were an offshoot. They're an unusual breed. You have reports of 6 fingers and then 5 fingers. You have the reports of double rows of teeth and then just a normal man-looking frame, but on a gigantic scale. So I think there's difference in breed. You're going to have the problem with inbreeding, which will have its own discrepancies genetically. And then, you know, as these creatures migrated, their size and their mass is going to change based off of the food content and the amount of nutrients that they can obtain. So that's going to be a problem and a factor as well.
And geography could play a question. A lot of people think that blacks have more myelin in their skin because of the African continent and more sunlight and so forth. So, and it influences their skin color. So, that's kind of the same argument. Brett, what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I think geography or location has something to do with the differences that you find. I think in some instances, like the Nordic type or Celtic type people, they were farther north. Some of these are recorded as having more hair, more body hair. Then the further south you go, it seems as if there's less body hair. But you know, the double rows of teeth and the 6 fingers come up a lot. And like Doug said, some are found with 5 fingers, some with 6. So I don't know, there might be a DNA component there that would alter these people to have more digits than the other people are. There's a host of different stories from different parts of the world, and each giant seems to be a little bit different in some instances. There's even giants that's been recorded here in the United States, with double rows of teeth and 6 fingers. You find the same thing over in the Levant area. So there is some characteristics that are common in different locations and some that are not.
You know, one thing that I find interesting is that you don't hear much lore, which is lore is the sometimes written but mainly spoken memory of these giants that's kept with all the tribes that had the most interaction with them. And one thing you don't hear much about were the females. That's not really spoken of very much, though we do, as we believe, have skeletal remains of them. I think the females were a little bit more rare and the males seem to be a little bit more common. But what we know about the giants is that they're cannibalistic, apparently. From accounts, the raping from giants to a normal sized person appeared to be common. So whenever you're mixing blood, the genes, you're going to have mutations, and also you're going to weaken that original DNA. And, you know, like King Og from Bashan, and even the giants that were within the Noadic region, they did seem to get smaller. Could they have gotten smaller because females grew less and less, and they had to then mate with regular human females? That could be a reason why you have an offshoot of five fingers versus six fingers. That mutation that was strongest stuck out and then died out. And that could also be contained regionally. If within one region, you had these certain types of giants, and then they spread, and that DNA got, like, you know, more polluted from mating with regular human females, that could be a reason. But here's one thing I want you to talk about, Brent. When we visited Cave 1 that had the 7'4" skeleton in it, there were also other things inside there. So I want you to mention two things. One, the human ritual sacrifice that seems to go along with giants and their resting place. And then two, can you speak about the artifacts? Because there's a difference, as you know, more than anyone else, of ceremonial tools and then working tools. And the things that were found, like what we uncovered in the archaeological warehouse.
Yeah. So, okay. So the sacrificial thing that comes up, or the sacrificial element that shows up in some of these sites. Matter of fact, I'm working on a site right now that hopefully next time you and Mondo come up, then we'll be able to explore this site also. But there's usually a sacrifice stone or an altar type structure. And a lot of times they have a blood groove in them, and the blood groove leads down to the ground. So it's, for some reason, they want the blood to return to the earth in this ritual type event that takes place, which involves sacrificing humans. About the artifacts, one of the artifacts that we found, we actually found while we were exploring this Cave 1 that you referred to, is it's called a Calf Creek Point. And it's significant because among collectors, it's kind of like the holy grail of points. It's different in that they're usually a lot larger. They're a spear point. They have long tines on each side of them. A lot of people are familiar with the Clovis points and the Dalton points. Those are pretty popular among collectors.
And what we're talking about is arrowheads when he means points.
Well, yes, or spear points, projectile points.
Right.
Stone projectile points. So the Clovis and the Dalton are more common, but the serious collectors want a Calf Creek point. And these points originate at the site we were at in north central Arkansas. They're found in Missouri. They're found in Texas. They're found in Oklahoma. And they probably were traded, or people migrated that use these. The female that we found, that we didn't find the female. The female that was found in this same cave was in the sitting position when they found her. There was actually other skeletons buried around her. In the newspaper article that we had from 1937, one of the articles said that a peculiar thing about the other skeletons that were buried around her, which I believe there were 14, that they had no nasal cavities. That seemed very odd to me, but there was lots of bones piled in the back of that cave with teeth marks and different cuts in them that made the first people that explored that cave believe that this tribe was cannibalistic. And so you got this special type projectile point that's originates at this place. It's called a Calf Creek Point. And then you have the cannibalistic element here, and then you have a giant all in the same place here. And this is what makes us believe that what we found here is what we like to refer to as a Nephilim site.
I was wondering that. Oh boy, yeah. That's so interesting.
Go ahead.
I have a question along those lines.
All right.
I know you and I talked about this the last time, but I think it's worth referring back to. Do you think this has anything to do with Genesis 6?
Yes, and I was going to bring that up. What Doug said earlier about, in most cases, the giant form is masculine. Okay? I think that could have a lot to do with the Genesis 6 and the angelic factor. If we take the Genesis 6 narrative and we believe that the sons of God were angels and they were the ones that took the daughters of men as wives, then it would stand to reason that the angelic, well, in the angelic realm, most that all that I know of angelic mention in biblical texts are masculine. And so it would be the dominant gene in a union between an angel and a human. And therefore, maybe it would more often throw a male child versus a female. I was going to bring that up about what Doug said earlier, because he did mention that most of the time that you find these giant skeletons, they're a male skeleton.
Yeah, and the heroes of old of antiquity that were of gigantic proportion or superhuman, as we would like to say now, are always masculine. Yeah. Very rarely mm-hmm. do you hear of anything that is female. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I don't have any real answers for that. I don't think anybody does, but it's a good speculation to try and wonder why it was that the females were rare or just not as numerous. Brent, with some of the places that we've been to, in the caves and the other sites that we've been to, do you ever think that the larger size spear points and what we would refer to as bird points that sometimes are an offshoot, do you think those were created to try and combat the giant? Or could it just be that, you know, some of these spearheads were just bigger?
Well, you've got to let's talk about the term bird point. That's kind of a misnomer. Some people call them that because they thought that they were tiny enough to they would be used to shoot birds with or to gig fish or frogs. But actually, if you will think in modern terms, if any of you guys out there are hunters, you know that, you know, it's common. A broadhead is probably like 125 grams. Mm-hmm. It has to be light because the arrow will nosedive if it's not light. So these what people call bird points are actually the true arrowheads. If they're larger than that, they went on an atlatl or a spear. So the larger points are generally spear points. The small, what they call bird points, are actually true arrowheads. But I think, you know, you've got, I think you got different cultures of people making these things. We know the Native Americans were here. Everything that they made was for practical use for hunting. But then, like when we went to the fact storage facility with L.A. Marzulli in Fayetteville at the University of Arkansas, we discovered that they had about an 18-inch long spearhead. And
it was massive. So, it's about the size of my hand.
It's huge. It's huge. Massive. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when you've got something that large, then you got to say, okay, you know, either they're taking down a mastodon or mammoth with this thing, or maybe this is a giant that's building this thing to war against another giant. So when you find stuff that's uncommonly large, a lot of people say, oh, this stuff is ceremonial. Well, ceremonial stuff is usually perfection. It's usually flawless. But when you find giant spearheads that are more crude and look as if they've had some wear to them, then you're going to say this is a tool that was used. This was not a ceremonial piece. And so you got to say, okay, now what was this used for? You know, it's either, like I said, either used to take down a giant animal or to war against another giant human type.
Now, from what you know in North America, especially with your years of exploration, what about mm-hmm. metallurgy? What are the accounts of metallurgy within the Native people, the First Nations people?
How advanced were they?
Okay, well, first of all, in my opinion, what we call Native Americans, what was referred to as Indians, we call them First Nation people or Native Americans. From my knowledge, they didn't use metal. A metal was used by, well, let's say, like when Hernando de Soto came over. You would think, okay, they had metal. They had they were advanced in metals, and they had different things that They had horses. They had war dogs. They had different advancements than what the natives had. Okay, so if you find something that's metal and you can determine that it's not from De Soto or other Spaniard types that came here, then you have to say, okay, this came from another culture that maybe predated the Native Americans. And we have Native Americans that we've talked to that are actually part of our team that have discussed and told us that, you know, this is not part of their lore, this metal thing. But we do. We also know that up around the Great Lakes that there's copper mines that mined out before the time of Columbus.
Really?
And this stuff is, you know, this copper is so pure that it's easily identifiable because you can look under a microscope and say, hey, this is Michigan copper. And sometimes it's found in South America. Sometimes it's found in Europe. So when I think of, when I see metal artifacts like metal jewelry, ear spools, necklace pieces, breastplates, matter of fact, one of the sites that we're getting ready to work on, there was a skull found with a metal faceplate over it. So you've got to say this is either a Spaniard or this is a culture that predates the Native Americans because somebody was mining and making things out of metal and distributing throughout the world before the Native Americans arrived on the scene.
So metal was a foreign substance, more or less, to that culture.
Right. It's kind of like when you go back to the biblical narrative, when it describes the Israelites made stone tools up until the point that they encountered the Philistines. And then they were able to purchase weapons from the Philistines, but they had to take them back to the Philistines in order to be sharpened because they didn't have the technology or the know-how to do this. And so that kind of goes along with, you've got two cultures over here in North America. One of them knows stone tools and the other one knows how to work metal.
That's interesting. They grew up side by side. Maybe the question I have, have you found any like hieroglyphs, petroglyphs, anything to indicate that, there could be another source of origin for where they came from, like China or Egypt, or do you think North America was their original home?
Your first question, have I found petroglyphs? Yes. And we've even found the origin of from where the petroglyphs came from. It's a written language called Ogham. It's Celtic in nature. So it would come from the England area. And we have a cave that we visited, Doug and I did. There's actually a burial inscription written on the cave wall. There's one like it in Tennessee. There's one like it in Colorado.
Language? Oklahoma. With Celtic, not familiar with it. Is it different alphabets or?
No, it looks like it looks like a series of straight lines with a dot, almost like music notes. Is really kind of what it looks like. Mm-hmm.
And if I'm sorry, guys, if I don't ask the question, my audience is going to say, "Dave, do your job."
That's fine.
Okay, because Celtic is not really well known, but that's so fascinating. So you think the origin that you could link to would be maybe from from England area?
Yes, England, Scotland, Ireland area. Matter of fact, there's a legend that that there was a prince over England. I'm going to say around, I may have this wrong. I'm going to say around 900 AD, there was a volcanic eruption in Iceland and the ash plume fell on England. You can look this up. This prince name is Prince Madoc, and he commissioned ships to sail across the ocean and find a new land because their land, it's recorded in England's history that when this ash landed on England, that England was uninhabitable for 11 years. So you might want to jot that down and do a research on that. But that would explain why this Ogham language, this Celtic language called Ogham, was used between the 4th century and about the 11th century. Okay, so you can date, you know, if you can determine this stuff that we find here in the United States is actually Ogham, then you can say, okay, it's you know, from 400 to 1100 is when this language was used. So somewhere in that span is when they came over here, which messes up the whole Columbus story.
Well, the Columbus story has been discounted so many ways, too.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But this is just another way. You know, I want to digress just for a moment, because there's the controversy in the human race, and bear with me, really, I'm going somewhere with this, okay, that, you know, we have the XYY male, the male with the extra Y chromosome. We know they're retarded, they're extra violent, they're oversexed, and they're in prison a lot. And it's about 1 in 300 males, it's estimated. Okay, and the normal is the XY. There's some geneticist that I've talked to that thinks it might have been natural to have the XYY be the dominant back when, but when someone discovered fire and metallurgy, brain power became more important, and the criminal XYYs ended up in prison or executed, and so XY became the dominant. So let me take that rationale and apply it to this. You've got 7 to 10 foot people who are humanoid, this is the way I would describe them. And today, the average height of a North American male is 5'10". So when you look at that, and I'm just wondering, is there an analogy there with the XYY and why we're shorter? Or do you have any thoughts on how things changed?
Doug, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I give credit to what you said. You know, technology and innovation will eventually beat out brute force. You know, brute force scares off a lot of the mating. Brute force can then turn tyrannical and everyone turn against you and kill the guy who's the biggest problem. And, you know, if that is the case, and maybe that's why, I do think that genetically there was a group of people that were here at one point that may be the last remnants of what the giants had spreading their seed. And maybe those people have slowly died out as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, if we word it wrong, we get to talking about evolution. And I think throughout history, we've been devolving rather than evolving.
Really?
And I think along with that, you'll have genetic marks that show up that are corrupted or inferior. In some way, and that's what brings about different undesirable personality traits, and it could be because of the mixture that's taking place over time between, you know, if we did have some kind of, I mean, we've got all kinds of lore and even evidence that we did have a race here that was larger than what we are today. We know that Asians are for the most part smaller than Europeans, smaller than here in the United States. The Spanish culture seems to be a little bit shorter, and then you have other cultures that are taller. I think we're all a mixture of genetic devolution. Is that a word?
Yeah, de-evolution. And let me tell you where else I see this, Brett. I've known a fair amount of psychologists, and it's become an in vogue thing to do to investigate people's so-called psychic powers that are using quantum physics models often to investigate. And what some of these guys have told me is I've asked them, are we evolving into this or are we evolving out of it? And they all clearly say, we think based on our historical research from archival literature, that's not scientific, but it's consistent. When they do a qualitative analysis, what they concluded is we're evolving out of it. And I said, do you think this is bad for our species? And they said, absolutely. And they said, the one guy said to me, if it wasn't for antibiotics, we'd be living to about 35, 40 years of age. He said, we're becoming weaker as human beings. It's interesting you'd say that, because I've heard that before in another domain.
Well, I think when you say that we're becoming weaker as human beings, that has a lot to do with a few things. For one thing, the modern industrial revolution extended the life of almost everybody in the world, especially we Americans. When, you know, if you look in biblical times, people lived hundreds of years. All right. We don't really have an explanation for that. But then God said, you'll live 70 years. All right. And now we still have people that, you know, live 80, 90, sometimes 100 years, sometimes a little bit longer past that. But they're frail, fragile people who are practically useless to any type of physicality. Now, the people back in the biblical times were not. You know, I mean, you got some people that are, you know, hundreds of years old, still kicking and rocking. And then, you know, if you look at modernity today, you have some men that are my age that are 35, and they look more like they have the consistency of a marshmallow than they do an athletic 35-year-old male. I think a lot of that has to do with these things. When you take the hunter-gatherer mindset out of a man, okay, I'm not going to involve women in this speech, but when you take the hunter-gatherer mindset, the alpha male, the leader of the wolf pack mindset out of a male, you automatically start to take away parts of the male's persona, characteristic that makes us the alpha male of the planet. And all of a sudden now we're just part of the food chain. And with the advent of better medicine, air conditioning, purified water, we're able to live longer. But what that ended up doing, because we can live longer, we can live easier, people also got softer. People got more mentally fragile, and their muscular dominance also dwindled along with their bone mass. You can see an evidence back in time where the bone mass is actually decreased. Now, the height thing has obviously a lot to do with nutrition. If you look at people around the world who live in a third world country, they all have stunted growth. For the most part, there are outliers, but for the most part, they have stunted growth because they don't have the same amount of nutrition. In America, we have the absolute opposite. We have literal hippopotamuses walking around in America who claim to be every type of weakness and fragility, but some of these people are 400, 500, 600 pounds, but they indulge themselves so much they've become useless. And the absolute opposite. Look at the people that are in the Amazonian forest that can live for who knows how long, barefoot, very little clothing, shooting monkeys out of the sky with, you know, bow and arrow, and surviving in some of the most harshest, dangerous places on earth and thriving. We have Americans who can't even thrive, and everything is done for you. You don't have to make fire with your hands every day. You don't have to chase down your food. But when you take that, hunter-gatherer out, you take out a lot of that, I don't want to say macho-ness, but what made the male the alpha male. Back in the day, every man had to be an alpha male. Every man had to be the leader of the pack. Every man had to chop his own wood, build his own house, go out and hunt, go out and gather, go out and farm. And this was manual, laborious work. The thing that also stunted a lot of people were the kingdoms and rulers who actually withheld a lot of the nutrients for those people and made them subservient. If we look back in modern times, right now, you can see different places around the world where they are under a tyrannical dictatorship like North Korea. The people's height are stunted. They have extremely poor health, and it's because of their nutrition. Now, very, very long ago, thousands of years ago, you would think that nutrition would have been a problem, but it really wasn't. These people were able to feed their families just fine. Giants were able to feed themselves just fine, either upon people or whatever they could find to eat. And they grew to enormous size because they also took from the land and from the people. And there are stories of the Native Americans here in North America who talk about being almost subservient slave class or serf class to the giants. And Brent, I'll let you take over on that.
That's good points. Good points.
Okay, well, let me address the nutrition issue. You know, there's periods of throughout history, there's periods of let's say I just lost my train of thought. There's periods of times when you flourish, and there's times when things are diminished, and there's not, a lot of that's due to climate changes. A lot of it's due to different factors. Disease pops up from time to time, which suppresses people. But let's just say the last couple hundred years. Okay. Let's say like the 1800s, 1900s, men were living to be 35, 40 years old. And then we start coming up with a little better way of doing things, some more medicines, and then people's lives get extended to upwards to 100 years. And now it seems like we're going through another phase. Let's say World War I and World War II era, just a little post-World War II. We're becoming the strongest people that we've been in a while. People are starting to live 70, 80, 90 years old. Okay. And now, through the 60s and 70s, 80s, we flourished, and now it seems like we're on a decline again. And I blame part of this on the food industry. They're wanting to make more profits. They're using ingredients that are less nutritious but more profitable, and they've got us hooked on this stuff. I mean, you know, we're wanting to go fast. We're wanting to use a microwave. We're wanting to eat processed food. It seems like everybody's watching the clock. It's go, 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 and we got to eat and go, eat and go. And so we've done this to ourselves, but we've allowed ourselves to be on the decline because the we've just fallen into the profits that the food industry wants to make. And it's through propaganda we've been taught to eat stuff that's not good for us anymore, but we do it in the name of let's go, let's go, let's go.
Convenience.
Well, yeah. I think it's greed. Could be ulterior motives that you hear about, but greed definitely. But we also have this in pharmaceuticals. If I were a PhD student right now and I was studying longevity, I would do a multiple regression analysis with each one of these factors: diet changes, vaccines, the effect of COVID, and so forth. Because since COVID was introduced, and I'm choosing those words intentionally, we have lost over 2 years off our lifespan here in America. I don't know if you guys were aware of that or not, but we've lost 2 years. And so you're right, we are going backwards. I look at it, my feeling is this, Brett, let me run this by you. I don't know if the food industry took us backwards in lifespan, but I think it stunted what should be a royal period where we're jumping way ahead because of medical technology.
Well, can I answer that real quick? The food industry absolutely poisoned us, because from the hunter-gatherer tribes all up until the medieval times, people had less body fat percentage. They ate more protein. They didn't have as much flour. They didn't have as much sugar. And especially like the people within the Nordic tribes, they didn't have sugar. They didn't have an introduction of sugar. If you look at the dental records of Vikings, they have some of the cleanest teeth out of any skeleton that you'll find. But you know, these people drank cod liver oil. You know, we're talking about a whole different society of people from 200 years ago and beyond to today. Now, when you're sick, you take this pill, you take that pill. You know, whenever your throat hurts, you spray this, you suck on this lozenge. You know, it's those people died off in the old days. The people that were sick, the people that were weak, they died off. The stronger survived. Nowadays, we have a whole new system that's set up to let everyone survive, supposedly as equally as possible. But one of the biggest things that's killing people in America isn't guns. It isn't white supremacy. Just yet, it's not your tyrannical government. It's actually people that are dying because of obesity. You know, that's actually one of the biggest killers in America. And it was
that's kind of what Brent's saying, though.
It was probably one of the least things that would have killed you back in the day, Brent.
Yeah, let me bring up a couple of points here. First of all, what you described about the skeletal remains that had real good teeth. You also find that in Native American skeletal remains up until the point that corn was introduced to the Native Americans. And then you start to see tooth decay. So you can sometimes do a pretty good guess of what period these skeletal remains came from by looking at their teeth. And if you can figure out when you start finding corn remains in mounds and stuff like this, and then look at the teeth, you can kind of tell what era these type skeletal remains are from. Another thing you brought up, we were talking about the food production. Okay, I'll give you an example of when this food production thing with the food industry started to change. I'll give you a couple examples. When I was young, my grandfather had a farm, and one of the crops that we raised was wheat. And so this is back in the 80s. So the Monsanto came to us, and they said, we're wanting to make a better wheat. And so we're going to give you this seed, and we want you to plant this seed, and we're going to we're going to take this and cross-pollinate this seed with another seed, and we believe that we can come up with a wheat seed that will give you a bigger harvest, a better yield. And so at that time when we were using regular wheat seed, or I'm going to call it regular wheat seed or original wheat seed, about the most that we could yield is about 40 bushels per acre. Okay, so we went through this program, and they paid us to plant this seed. We didn't know we were doing anything that may be detrimental to our health later on. But we planted this seed, and then they planted male and female strips, and they cut it at different times. And then somehow or another, they cross-pollinated this stuff and made some alterations. And then they brought us another seed the following year, and they said, this is the hybrid seed that you created in your field. Now we want you to plant this seed. So they paid us to plant this new hybrid seed, and we actually yielded 90 bushels per acre. You know, I said before we could only yield 40 bushels per acre. This year, this particular year, we could yield 90 bushels per acre. Well, that made more profits for us, the farmers, made more profit for the food manufacturers, the people that make bread. And, but what they didn't tell us was we just cut the nutritional value in half.
How did they do that? What they take out by the process?
I don't know what was actually lost in the process, but you know, let me give you my other example first, and I'll kind of point to something that shows us how we're going in decline health wise. Okay, do you remember back? Some people remember this back. They had the Pepsi challenge, and they had the new Coke versus the old Coke, and all this kind of stuff. Well, all that was. What they did was they changed in 1 year, Coca-Cola changed from using Imperial cane sugar to high fructose corn syrup. And they did it all at one time, but they got some kickback from a lot of people because they didn't like the taste of it. And so the following year, they only put 10% high fructose corn syrup and 90% Imperial cane sugar. And then the following year, it was 20%, 80%, and then 30, 70. And so they gradually over time got us used to the taste of this stuff. And this is not just, I'm not just talking about the soda pop industry, but different foods that use sugar have gone to high fructose corn syrup or other like sweeteners as a sweetener. But as you know, the body cannot process corn, neither can it process corn syrup. And it starts reacting in, I remember when I was a kid that it was rare that people had diabetes. I'm type 2 diabetic right now myself. But it was rare that you heard of people with diabetes. Now diabetes has just exploded. And I believe it's because of the changes in the ingredients that they're putting in food.
I totally
nowadays.
Agree with you. The one thing I wanted to ask you is this, was this the introduction of GMOs too?
Was this what?
The introduction of GMOs.
Oh, yeah, I think so. And now, by doing so, they've created themselves another market. Now we have a non-GMO market. And so some people are aware, and they will purchase and pay more for a non-GMO product, but the food industry actually created this other product. You know, the Food and Drug Administration is the same administration for a reason, I believe. Why would food and drugs be in the same administration? I think the food that they feed us causes us to need to buy the drugs that they want to sell us.
That's brilliant. Yeah, that's brilliant. Because it does make sense because they're slowly poisoning us over time and getting us used to the poison.
Yeah, we're looking at the demise of humans with this process. And you know, you hear the depopulation allegations and you just wonder if this is not slow kill. And I want to take this back to the giants we're talking about. We can see our path for demise, nuclear weapons, dirty air, bad diet, obesity, and the spinoff effects. What killed off these giants, in your opinion?
I think that there was different. Well, you've got to be rooted in something. You've got to call something your fact line. For me, it's the Bible, and the Genesis 6 narrative tells us that there was giants in the earth in those days, and then it says, and also after that. And that, to me, what that's referring to is before the flood and after the flood. Now, we can go into debate on how they got here after the flood. The flood, I believe, was designed to take out this race. But evidently the same type of thing occurred again after the flood, because we've got evidence of giants being here biblically and in historical documents of being here after the flood. So, and we've not, we've talked about that we were going to entitle this Giants and Giant Structures. We've not mentioned much about structures yet. But the fact that we have structures here on Earth that we cannot reproduce today tells us that there was at one time something here, someone, some race that was here that's superior to us. You know, just let's take the Baalbek stone in Lebanon. This stone is so huge. The biggest hydra crane that we have, a hydra crane is a big lifting device. The biggest one that we have is, let's say the Baalbek stone is such a size that we could fit 21 cranes of the biggest hydra crane that's made today around this stone. And those 21 cranes could not lift this stone. Yet this stone was quarried from about 200 miles from its current location and brought to where it is today. How did they do it? If we can't lift it with the modern equipment that we have today, then evidently there was a race that was here that was superior to us at one time.
You know, when I was in Peru and I was doing bodyguard work for Tim Alberino and Steve Quayle, we would go to some of these sites, and Ajaltitambo was one of them, you know, Machu Picchu, Sacsayhuama. And they told us, the historians that'll be walking around in all these places, right? These are government-based historians who all have the same line that they give you. It's rehearsed. And they tell you that some of these stones, and I mean, you know, 30, 60-ton stones that were quarried 2 to 3 miles away, and you can see where they were drug over mountains. You can still see the scarring, the scarification of the mountains where they were sliding these stones down. And they said that they were able to quarry these stones and push them up a mountain and then down a mountain 2 to 3 really? Different times. Yeah, just to get to this site that's, you know, the one site, Machu Picchu, is 13,000 feet in the air.
Yeah.
So they said that they did it with braided rope that they made from whatever vegetation, seashells, shark skin, and then manpower. Yet, I promise you, no one can replicate any of that with seashells, shark skin. They pull out some stuff that they find along the coast where you may have Bronze Age tools here or there, and there's not really an explanation for that. But then you have other sites, Brent. I don't know if you want to talk about this. We can keep it confidential if you want. But there are other places like in South America, Pumapunku, that we are finding now similar structures in America where you have a perfect rectangle with a rectangle carved out in the center of it that matches Pumapunku.
Right. And you just read my mind. I was thinking the same thing. You know, you were down in Peru and next door in Bolivia, that's where Pumapunku is, right? And you've got these stones that have fallen down, actually. They were standing. Some of them may be still standing. But these stones are worked with laser-type precision. I mean, if we were to be able to have a laser that could cut stone, this is how precise this stone is cut. And it fits together. It's interlocking. One of our guys that we've been working with recently sent a picture out to us this weekend, which he found this stone in Missouri during an excavation, and it's eerily similar to what you find in Pumapunku. So you've got, and you know, they make up all these stories about different ropes and pulley techniques and all this kind of stuff, but I think that there's a different technology. Some people theorize that these people may have had a way of levitating rock, or they may have had a way to melt it and form it. Some of the stuff at Ollantaytambo looks as if it was melted into a clay type form and fashion together. You can't even put a razor blade in between some of these stones.
Let me interrupt you. Ahead, and we'll be adding pictures to compare all these. When I was in Sacsayhuama, there were times where the rocks were formed in a pyramidal structure, and you couldn't fit a knife blade in it. You couldn't fit a piece of paper in it. And almost the entire structure was that way, oblong shape of rocks. And then there was a series of rocks, and me and L.A. Marzulli were standing right there next to it. And I thought the strangest thing when I put – and I have gigantic double XL gloved hands, so I have fairly large hands. I'm a fairly large guy. But when I put my hands up to where some of these stones were, you could almost see four digits. Like if someone had turned this stone gelatinous and then picked it up and moved it. And I mean, not small. I mean, each digit was the size of my palm. All right. And, and I'm just like, that looks like if a giant were to pick this stone up and put it there. Now, what do you think about the ability to use harmonics to change the density of stone? We know that we can do that. Yeah, we know that we can do that with harmonics. Even if we heat up stone to a certain level, you can actually make it malleable. But what do you think about the ancient people being able to do that?
Well, let's go back to the biblical account. It was harmonics that supposedly brought down the walls of Jericho. So, you know, they had the ram's horn that they blew. They marched around this thing several times, and then they blow the ram's horn, and it's something brought the walls down after they blew the ram's horn. They had to do a lot of other stuff before that. They had to march around like 7 days, and the last day they marched around it seven times, and then they blew these horns. And, you know, so definitely harmonics could have played a part. There's instances in the Bible where, in sheep herding and stuff like this, where they were able to make sheep be born a certain way with either specs or no specs. And so that's what we would in modern day call genetic manipulation. So I think you can refer back to the Bible and see that people have done things in the past that we think is modern technology. But, you know, even the book of Ecclesiastes tells us that there's nothing new under the sun.
It's fascinating stuff. It really is. Here's one of the reasons I like studying this, and this is not the only reason. Just pure curiosity motivates me. But these civilizations ended, and I think it behooves us in our present state to figure out why, for the purpose of avoidance. What do you think?
Well, you know, here's my question. Why are there pyramids found in the bottom of the ocean? Why are there structures that are made that we don't have the scientific or engineering capabilities to replicate, like the pyramids?
Let me answer your first question. The only thing that explains your first statement about finding pyramids like Yamaguni at the bottom of the ocean is because of tectonic plate shifts. That's the only explanation.
Yeah. The Earth has changed over time. I theorize, and as I've already stated, I largely lean toward a biblical view. But we have the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. Sodom and Gomorrah was a place where evil sprung up kind of in a localized area. And so God took that out. And I don't believe that was the only place where that happened. I believe there was times throughout history where God took out certain locations that were springing up in an evil way that he didn't approve of. For instance, I strongly lean toward Atlantis being a real thing. And it could have been another Sodom and Gomorrah. Atlantis could have been taken out like Sodom and Gomorrah was. So I think the reason why you find some of these places under the ocean is, well, it used to be dry land at some point, and then something happened. Now,
okay, yeah.
Why did something happen?
I have to restate what I just said. It may not just be tectonic plates. It could be the judgment of God, whatever mechanism he used to punish. I think that's an excellent point.
Tectonic plate movement could also be a correct terminology, but God's the one that did it.
Yeah, exactly.
So
Well, you know, you also have something called the Younger Dryas effect that is now, you know, starting to surface and gain a lot of popularity. I actually do give a lot of weight to the Younger Dryas effect, where about 12,000 years ago is when the whatever it was that hit the Earth that rewrote history, and then we kind of restarted. We don't know pre-Adamic what was here. You know, our friend Timothy Alberino is a good expert in this, and he has a great mind when it talks about pre-Adamic structures and civilizations. But I think there was something here. It may have been angelic in formation, I would only assume. And I also assume that that would probably be elsewhere within our galaxy, that they also explored other areas. That's why you find pyramid structures on Mars. That's why you find obelisks on Phobos, one of the moons of Mars. There's other structures that we found that you can see sometimes in other planets. Saturn, Jupiter is one of them. There's all these strange anomalies that we find. Do you think these megalithic structures, because let me ask you something, Brent. A lot of people give weight to this, and the ancient aliens people, I think, muck up the waters quite a bit. They talk about the ancient astronaut theory, and that some of the pyramids are actually generating machines. They were actual spacecraft. What do you think about that? And the other part of this question is, do you think it would they would return in one of these ancient megalithic structures?
Well, my view on that is, let's first of all address the pyramids are like structures being able to generate electricity. I think it's a possibility. We know that there's stone rings in South Africa, and I mean, there's like 30,000 of these things, and they're made out of a certain type of stone, and you can go out, there's no gates or doorways on it, it's just these round circles, and you can put a meter on these things, and they're emitting electricity today, and it's because they're built over a limestone aquifer. And there's a certain type of material that they chose these stones. They didn't use just any stone. It wasn't sandstone. Type of rock that they used.
That gives connectivity, right?
Right. And some people theorize that the Pyramid of Giza is built in the same way. It's built over a limestone aquifer. They say that Tesla knew that. And when he built the Tesla Tower.
He did.
Same kind of concept there going on. And so my theory on it is, I think we could replace the word ancient aliens with fallen angels.
I agree.
And I think that for a time that they were allowed to flourish here and even corrupt. We know that only 8 people survived the flood, according to the biblical text. So I believe it starts back with a character named Tubal-Cain. He's the first character in Genesis who starts teaching people how to do stuff that they didn't know how to do. I think throughout history, technology was given to humans and it corrupted them over time. And the Bible said that at the time of the flood, one of the reasons why God destroyed the earth is because man's thought was only evil continually. So we got to the point to where we got enough technology that it took us out. Okay. Let's say if Satan devised a plan to do that in the beginning, and it worked so well that he got all but 8 people. Well, that's a plan that's good enough to get most of the people on Earth on the second go around. So maybe he has made us forget what happened in the past, so we won't recognize what he's doing now, which is the same thing he done in the past. And to technology that we have now may corrupt us to the point to where, well, in Jesus's words, he said, "Will I find any faithful when I return?"
No flesh left alive.
That's right. And I think we're headed towards extinction right now.
Yeah.
Not just the food and anything going on with the climate.
No, it's societal problems.
But look at the nuclear war threat. I like what Michio Kaku said in terms of accuracy. He talked about if you projected out high level civilizations and what they control, and this is hypothetical, but he used a lot of mathematical formulas to build it. And he said, out there in the universe, if you found this kind of society at level 5, he said they could master the power of the sun and so forth. And he came down to us, and we're what he calls a pre-level one. And he said, we have a 5% chance of making it into level one, and the next 60, 70 years are critical. He said, we have to survive our uranium period. And if this does in other cultures out there in the universe, this is where they're most likely to fail. What do you guys think about that hypothesis?
I think a lot of these things are leading to the advent of the UFO disclosure, honestly.
Blue beam?
No, not. Me personally, and Brent, I don't know where you sit on this. Me personally, I think there will be something that comes from the sky. I think there will be. I think, and you know, this is my own conjecture, guys. I'm not being heretical when I say this, but I think that the fallen angels were able to grab some of their offspring, get it off world, and that will be what visits us as the Greys, the Insectalin, the Nordic Whites, whatever they want to be called. To me, that makes the most sense.
How do you know they haven't already come back? Because, you know, Doug, my theory is we have two different DNAs on this planet. Well, you have the fallen angels, and we have humans, God's prized creation. How do you know that that didn't already happen?
I think it has, and it's...
Go ahead, Brent. Go ahead.
Okay, I think it has, and it's continuing to happen, because we've got a parable in the Bible about the tares and the wheat. It starts out, it says, the enemy came in and sowed tares among the wheat. What that means is that the enemy would be Satan. He came in and he sowed tares, which would be weeds, among the wheat. Okay, so that goes back to Genesis 3:15. It says, God's talking to Adam, Eve, and Satan. And he tells Satan, he said, I will put enmity between your seed and the seed of the woman. So the Genesis 3:15 tells us that there's going to be good and bad seed, or evil and good seed here on earth. And then you go to the tares and the wheat parable, it's telling us the same thing. The enemy is planting his seed among us. And the Bible tells us that at the harvest, he's going to separate them, but he's going to let us mingle together until then. The book of Daniel says that, and they will mingle themselves with the seed of men. Well, who is that? Whoever they is something other than the seed of men.
I agree. Brett, let me ask you this. If you're the product of that seed mingling, can you still find redemption in confessing Jesus Christ and following him?
Well, I believe the Bible tells us, I believe something happened when Jesus died on the cross. I believe it made us all eligible, unless we're in a period where we're, that's hard to answer. Let me elaborate on something I said earlier. When I was talking about technology being passed to us, I mentioned Tubal Cain. Let me mention two more modern people. Tesla was given knowledge, and he claims that he got it from up there somewhere.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. And then we had Hitler. Germany was coming up with stuff that, you know, they came up with rocketry and jet propulsion. And then now we've got Elon Musk coming up with stuff. You know, back in Tesla's day, there wasn't any practical use for the things that he was inventing. But now in modern times, we're using all of his inventions. He invented sonar, radar. He even invented radio. He didn't get the credit for it. Marconi got the credit. But he invented radio. He invented microwave. He invented cellular. He invented all this stuff. And they thought he was just some lunatic back then. But we're using all of his technology today. So, you know, I think there's periods throughout time where Satan has corrupted us with technology. And we're going further and further down the sinkhole the more technology we get.
I'm wondering if these giants face similar things. Is there any evidence that they had a governmental structure of any kind?
So here's the thing with the apocryphal books. I think it's like the second book of Enoch, which I have problems with it because you can't, you know, Jesus does mention Enoch. So we know Enoch was a real character. But I think there's a lot of things that are at sometimes propped up, artificially wrote, not well vetted, and you can't really.
Yeah, there's forgeries.
Yeah, there's obviously things to lead us off the path that Jesus took us to, and it's for us to focus on all this mystical, paranormal, crazy stuff. But yet, you know, Christ said, "Focus on me, not focus on all this other crazy stuff over here. But we're so attracted to it that we forget that Jesus is the one who died on the cross for our sins. Personally, let me give you my my personal opinion. I think any seed that was mingled with anything that was not of man is not redeemable. That's my mindset of, you know, the only way that this makes sense. If we're having incursions from heavenly bodies, that is not the way God had put it in line, and those things are not redeemable. But I also don't think that anyone who has the DNA of a fallen entity is normal. I don't think they look like me and you. I don't think they act like me and you. I think these are people that we may sometimes refer to as the elite that you don't see very much. I think that's a completely different bloodline of people.
I agree with that. In that, okay, let's bring up a big question here. What is the mark of the beast? You know, that's talked about among all types of peoples, religious or not. It's a topic that's out there. Okay, I think that this mark is going to alter your DNA to such that you're no longer human, and it will make you ineligible to be a child of God because you're no longer what God created in the beginning. So I tend to agree with what you said about anything that's mixed with a seed other than human genetics, like Adam was. I think that probably disqualifies you. And that's why it's important for us not to accept this mark. It's going to alter us to where we're not redeemable.
Well, Brent, do you think that has anything to do with, like, whenever the Pope from the Vatican would say that, you know, when aliens come down, he'll baptize them, and then they'll baptize him in return, and they're really our lost space brothers? You know, in my mind, that is the illusion to try and get people to think that, oh, we all came from planet Earth, and we're all great, the same deception. People. Exactly.
All right. Let me backtrack to what you originally asked a while ago, and I went a different direction because I wanted to backtrack on what I was talking about, technology being passed down. But what you said is, do we think we will see something come from the sky? You know, the Bible tells us that in the last days, the deception will be so great that if God did not cut time short, even the very elect would be deceived. So if we just sit here and imagine what is the most craziest thing that could take place that would deceive even the very elect, and that would be something that came from the sky. And I think that's what happened in the past, the Genesis 6 narrative. You know, the word Nephilim itself means the fallen ones. They came from the sky. They came from up somewhere. They came down here. So I think people have already seen that in the past. I believe those people thought that these people were gods, and they let them rule over their countries, like the line of pharaohs in Egypt. I believe they were descendants of that. And I believe that Satan's had his bloodline here on earth, and God has his bloodline here on earth. Exactly. And that they've been rulers throughout history. And the same thing's happening here in modern day America. I mean, you know, we can see that our government's going corrupt. And
you know, I see that so clearly. I've even put names on some of these people in a speculative way, like the Rothschilds.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they are, maybe they aren't. But I think they cross over to our bloodline, and they use greed and avarice and all these other things to get them to go with them. I think the Biden crime family is a prime example of this. But there are people, you know, I'm going to give you something really subjective here. And when I look at some world leaders like Trudeau and that crazy Ardern woman in New Zealand, when I look at them, and even with Xi Jinping, it's hard for me to put into words, but they have like this faraway, snake-eyed look. They don't look human. When they speak, they show no compassion, no empathy. They can't connect with people in a real human way. Do you see any of that from world leaders or some of the world leaders?
Yeah, the Bible tells us that we'll know a tree by its fruit. And when you see leaders that are doing things contrary to what we consider moral, or what we once considered moral, when we see morality in decline, you know, it's a direct result of the leadership. When we start changing laws to suit desires versus laws that suit God, you know, supposedly our country was founded on the biblical context, and we had a sense of morality, and we've been in decline, you know, over the last couple hundred years. And now things that even 20 years ago that we thought, were
5 years immoral, ago, teaching first graders about oral sex.
Right.
I mean, just a few years ago, that would have just gotten such an uprising. It's all been like post COVID. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. And it's like, you know, the television and all the devices that we look at is putting this in front of us over and over and over and over until we accept it as, you know, something common.
Well, what's interesting when you say television is that almost immediately with the advent of advanced technology from 1930 and beyond, everything that was technologically based, radio, TV, was immediately used for psychological warfare and propaganda. Immediately, if not the initial cause and use of it, manufacturing of it was for psychological operations, was all for military. Every bit of it was military based. But before I lose this thought, I want you to answer me on this. Do you think the inner marriage, the inbreeding of royal families is to keep the bloodline of what we may call the fallen in with themselves because they cannot mingle and procreate children with an average person? So they have to stay intermarried and interlocking. And that may explain that odd behavior from many of the, at least the European royal families.
I think that's a possibility. I'm not sure if they're aware of that being the reason. I think their reasoning in their mind would be to keep the power in the family, to hang on to the power. But it may be, like you say, it may be to keep that forbidden bloodline flourishing. That's a tough question, but that's an interesting thought. I hadn't really thought about that.
That's a really good question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you guys, both of you, your opinion on this. Things have gotten so bad and the left Satanists really control all the avenues of power. To say we're going to overcome that. No, I don't think so. The only way out, I think, is using the power of the Lord. And I think all three of us recognize that. So going back to the giants, have you found anything about their spirituality, religiosity, how much that drove them? Any clues there?
I think that, so are you asking, were the giants spiritual in any way?
Yes.
I think they served, you know, we've got illustrations in the Bible. I'll bring up two. Dagon and Molech are two entities that are worshiped in the Bible. And I believe that the line of giants are the Nephilim. I believe they worship that because it's a way of worship. I mean, those two things, Molech and Dagon, represent Satan. Baal in Baal worship, the bull, the calf, you know. And when it comes down to it, those all worship Satan. And I believe if they are the seed of Satan, they would have, I guess you would call it spirituality. They would give reverence to Satan.
You think the giants were satanic then in origin?
Well, I believe it was a seed of Satan. You know, if we believe that, okay, the fallen angels, according to the book of Enoch, there was 200 of them that banded together and they wanted to come down to earth. And so they left their place of abode is what Second Peter and the book of Jude says. They left their, I think the Greek word is okaterian. They left their heavenly realm, by their own choice. See, Bible tells us that, we have free will and evidently the angels do too, because they were allowed to come down and do this thing. They knew it was forbidden, but evidently they thought, well, if we all do this together, maybe God won't be so hard on us. I don't know what their thinking was, but their own lust caused them to come down and do what they were forbidden to do in the same way our own lust causes us to sin. So, you know, the Bible tells us we were made just a little beneath the angels. So we're like them, and they probably have the same, evidently they have weaknesses too. They can fall also, you know, Satan, the Bible tells us, that Satan took a third of the angels. We don't know how many there are, but we know the Bible tells us there's legions of angels, so we know there's probably a lot. So his army, this 200 that came down and did this deed that's illustrated in Genesis 6:4.
At Mount Hermon.
It tells us they are bound in chains of darkness until judgment. And so they're bound. But there's another class of demonic angels that are agents of Satan that are not bound, and they're influencing us. They're helping him today. They're loose. I believe they're loose. You know, I mean, it's obvious they're loose. I mean, look at the way the world's going.
Look at Congress. They turned a blind eye to fentanyl and child trafficking.
Well,
you don't have to go any farther than that.
Let me ask a question. We have powers and principalities and powers of the air. Okay. So me and my wife recently had this discussion. Powers and principalities, in my mind, powers, demonic, principalities, higher ranking demons, powers of the air, the angels, the falling angels. So when you talk about, do giants have a relationship with a religion? I think the actual answer is twofold. For one thing, the giants were worshipped. We have pantheons of God, of gods in every culture that's ever been on this planet. There's a pantheon of gods. Now, could it be that every angel or series of angels, the powers of the air, took control of regions, their offspring, which were the great men of old back then, the giants, the immortals, the heroes, the Herculeans, the mighty men. Could that be the sons of the gods? Okay. So in a way, you have cultures that worship giants, and then you had giants who gave homage to their fathers. And then the supreme being was Satan, because everything that Satan does has to be a copycat of what God did. That's why he is the king of this world right now, for now. So in my mind, the ruler of the world is the head god of the world, little g, right? The head god of the world is Satan. And then there's a hierarchy, just like how in heaven, it is God and then the Elohim. And then there is a hierarchy there. The thing that Satan doesn't have is Satan doesn't have a Jesus Christ. So what he has to have eventually through prophecy is he has to have his own son, the man of sin, perdition, you know, the lawless man, the Antichrist. That's what this entire buildup is for. I've been saying this for weeks, and I don't know why. God just spoke it in my mind one day. What we're seeing is the infrastructure buildup of the Antichrist. This is the infrastructure of the Antichrist. All these things have to happen. All this technology has to be built. Many people had to die off to advance society into the direction that we're going, because if we stayed as cavemen, then there's no way Bible prophecy could be fulfilled and every man in the world, every man and woman and child could see the Antichrist. So we're eventually getting to this point. Brent, here's my question for you. If King Solomon says there's nothing new under the sun, like he says in Ecclesiastes, what technology is reflective from ancient times to modernity where we'll all be able to know and see the same person at one time?
Yeah. Now you're getting into television and satellite technology. Is that what you're asking?
I just
want to know, how is it that we'll all be able to see the return of Christ?
Yeah. If there's nothing new,
I don't know
there's
how,
nothing new under the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what ancient technology do you believe that the giants, the Nephilim had
that will equal what?
Yeah, I think the Tower of Babel. That's the only thing that comes into my mind.
Yeah, and we don't know exactly what all was involved in that, but we know that it was one of those points like Sodom and Gomorrah that I talked about earlier. That's one of those places in time where God took a localized evil and he destroyed it. And what Dave mentioned earlier about the tectonic plates, the Bible even says something that, and I think it's in Genesis 10 when it's reading about the genealogies, and it goes down so-and-so beget so-and-so beget so-and-so, and it just keeps over and over and over until it comes to this guy named Peleg, P-E-L-E-G. And it says, because in his day the earth was divided. Well, when you look up the timeline on the Bible, when that took place, That's at the time of Tower of Babel and Nimrod. And so not only was the speech confused, but also I believe the land masses were broken up. You know, you can look at a globe today and tell that some of these pieces used to fit together. And, you know, I believe not only were the languages confused, but the land masses were split up, and it put people in different geographical places. It separated people. And so everybody's trying to figure out, well, how did people get to North America? There must have been a land bridge. Well, maybe the whole land mass was one big piece at one time, and God divided it up, and this piece that drifted over here was populated from the very beginning.
Like Pangaea?
I'm sorry?
Like Pangaea?
Yeah. And like, you know, okay, the Genesis story about the flood. He flooded the whole earth. Why? If North America and South America hadn't been discovered yet and wasn't populated, why did he flood the whole earth? I think he flooded the whole earth because the whole earth was populated. I don't know what technology there is going to be that would be back, would have been back then, that will allow us to see the return of Christ. Is that what your initial question was?
I think with, if you look at it in this way, let's simplify this. Angelic technology is lost. We don't have angelic technology anymore, so we don't have megalithic structure capabilities anymore. But the megalithic structures that I believe were built by angelic technology still lasted through every bit of devastation. They're still here. That's how well they were built. We're just now getting to the point where we can replicate this technology. And as the Bible tells us, the information at this point in time is going to grow significantly. People will be able to go to and fro. You know, at one point in time, you could go to and fro if everything's connected together. The Tower of Babel could have been the tallest structure in the entire continent, as it was one thing, because it was the most dominant structure. You know, I do believe that everything was split apart. You know, even Jesus said, if you had strong enough faith, you can tell a mountain to move. Well, if Jesus can tell a mountain to move, God can divide continents. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think what we're seeing now is that however this magic formed for this ability to make these megalithic structures, these gigantic structures, we're just now getting back into figuring this out, because we're really just now starting to blow the dust off a lot of these places and investigate it.
All right. Let me bring up something that Dave mentioned part of and you mentioned part of, and let's combine that thought. I don't remember exactly how you said it, David. Earlier, you kind of mentioned the fact that we're probably not going to enter to a period of revival. And Doug, you mentioned that we're going towards an Antichrist rulership. You know, technology's taking us there. You believe that the Antichrist is in our future pretty soon, probably. So, you know, the Bible prophesies that, actually. It tells us in the last days that man will become wiser and weaker. We talked about that earlier, about us becoming weaker. But we're getting more technology. The reason why, you know, now we push a mouse and a keyboard, whereas back in the day that you talked about the hunter-gatherers, you know, they were hunting and fishing and trying to grow crops and doing manual labor. And so, therefore, they were stronger. But I believe that we will see something come from the sky, possibly. I believe everybody's going to see it somehow. And I believe that, you know, the Bible says that before Christ's return, there will be an apostasy, which means a falling away. So that kind of tells us that revival may not be in our future unless it's in God's plan that the end doesn't come till 500 years from now, and maybe there'll be a chance.
See, I've thought that same thing, Brent, because I've said, if we caught fire for God, we can push this off to another generation.
Mm-hmm.
I have totally believed that. Some people have called me, I don't know, hypocrite, but I think it's possible. Gentlemen, we're way over time, so I'm going to come to you for concluding remarks. we're not done. We're in the middle of the story, people. So you think, Dave, don't end it. Don't end. We're going to do more. It's okay. Doug, let's start with you. Give us a summary.
Well, I think the next time we have this conversation, what we need to pick up off is trying to reconnect the Super Soldier program and the Gibberine. Because I think the eventuality is that the angels had to have gigantic sons in order to take on God's armies. And eventually with King David, they did fall. They were able to be killed along with Joshua. They were able to be killed. But everyone's getting weaker and stronger. But yet we have the ability now to create genetic superhumans. We're not there yet, but we're almost there. And as weak and as frail as we are with our fragility now, could you imagine the next series of Human 2.0, all 7.5 foot to 14 foot tall giants?
Yeah, is this the revival of the satanic giants, in your opinion?
Well, see, I mean, I think it's like modern day Nephilim.
Yeah,
exactly. That's what I'm thinking.
Exactly.
You said that earlier, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. We will have that capability because eventually, if Jesus didn't come back, there would be no flesh left alive because you can either stay this weak, puny human or take the next jab and become, you know, you would make Brian Urlacher look like a child. That type of strength, skill, speed, intellectual growth, that is the ability to conquer nations once everything collapses. And I do mean once everything collapses. There's no way with technology right now that giants could even make a dent against 50 cals, 20 millimeter rifles. They're going to explode upon impact. However, when all those things are gone, the biggest and strongest guy typically wins that fight.
Maybe the reason to disarm us and the desire to do so by the people running the planet who rejected God and their political party years ago, maybe it's because they don't want us to be able to resist. And I don't mean Democrats. I mean what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, Brett, give us your summary.
Yep.
Okay, my summary is, you know, a lot of the stuff that we have discussed tonight goes real deep. And I would suggest that people get rooted in something before they form an opinion about what they believe. I have chosen the Bible. The Bible covers a lot of the topics that we talked about. You know, the stuff that we've talked about tonight is not just, futuristic sci-fi. A lot of the stuff that we talked about has actually happened in history, and not only recorded in the Bible, but in other historical documents. So I would say, I would encourage our viewers to read the Bible, see what it says, read other historical documents, see what they say, see if they line up before you form an opinion, and don't let the world take you in a direction that you shouldn't go. Form your own opinion by your own research, your own due diligence.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, gentlemen. We just completed the longest show in the history of the Common Sense Show, .tv. But I loved every minute of this. I am not feeling well, as you can tell, and I wouldn't have missed this for anything. And I'm sure I speak for our audience, and I'm sure you guys are all appreciative out there. And I would add, just as my concluding remark, you can't go wrong if you choose Jesus. And that's really, I believe, our only way out of this. Amen. Gentlemen, awesome. Awesome stuff. My mind's going to be spinning when I hit bed tonight thinking about this stuff. So thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. And I can't wait for us to do this again. And Doug, I'll give you a call here shortly. Good night to everybody. Thank you for joining us. And gentlemen, again, my pleasure and Doug's pleasure. Take care.
Thanks for having me.
all stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.